revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a special friend of the show. We're speaking with Miss Lynn Taylor, also known as the Common Core Diva. And this is kind of a segue or a pickup from one of the shows that we've done in the past, because the topic just keeps mushrooming and expanding. And, you know, every time I turn on the TV, there's a new commercial for some artificial intelligence, some sort of application. And, you know, it's moving to, you know, I know it's moving to the healthcare sector, but we talked in the past about the education sector. And I wanted to pick your brain so that people can get more information. You don't know what you don't know, and you can't make conscious decisions until you have all the information. And everything seems really sweetness and light, but I'm not sure that's the case. So I wanted to thank you, Lynn, for coming on the show today, because this is another important conversation that we're about to have.
Okay, sounds super.
So let's get rolling with my first question about AI and education. It's permeating our society, and it seems to be the next best thing. And what's the goal of it, in your opinion?
Okay, in my researched opinion, the goal for AI is simply one thing, or actually two things: control and profit.
That sounds like everything that we deal with, right?
I know. It absolutely does. And people are going to listen. They go, well, wait a minute. What does control and profit have to do with education? Well, it has everything to do with it, because you have a Congress that is in session right now that is holding hearing after hearing on the benefits of artificial intelligence in education, how it can become somewhat of a game changer, so to speak, in the aspect that, oh, well, we'll be able to have more skill-based jobs for Johnny and Susie. Well, how can you expect to have more skill-based jobs for anyone when AI is set and already taking over humans' positions? I mean, I've got people in my immediate family and extended family who have already lost their jobs because there's been a shift in artificial intelligence taking over. We see that we have the World Economic Forum that is holding meetings where they're saying that artificial intelligence will become our law, it will become our God, it will become our religion, it will become our education. So I don't understand how people don't get it, that when you shift away from human-centric ideas and values, and you foist it over to a computer that couldn't give a fig about who you are, but wants to control you, and the system wants to control you for that profit, because how many shows have we done where it's hurry up to learn so you can hurry up to earn?
Mm-hmm. It's exactly right. And, you know, the thing that strikes me is that there's this mantra that it's infallible, that it's knowledge-based, that it can do no wrong. It knows everything. It's better than humans. We've heard this in the healthcare sector, that it can make diagnoses better than doctors can, but it can also pull a plug too, because if you don't fit a criteria of, you know, this person's lived a great life, they're at the end of it, why waste resources? They have no compunction about saying it's about palliative care. And I forget the euphemism they used to use, something really innocuous, but that's where we're going. So, I mean, you think about AI, it's gathering all the information from what? The internet, the encyclopedias, where is it getting its information from?
It gets its information from what you put into the internet. So let's say, for example, I'm searching for a recipe on how to make an eggplant souffle. I mean, right now, I don't even know if there is such. But anyway, my point is, you're searching for a recipe. Based on how much I search, how many places I go to find a particular eggplant souffle recipe, AI is going to pick up on everything that I'm searching. And then it's going to start suggesting, well, okay, well, because you search for eggplant, well, here is everything that goes with an eggplant. Now, this would be in the traditional sense for recipes, but it also would bring in the more modern version of what eggplant stands for in text language, which is very, very obscene. So it's going to sit there and judge you on the fact of, well, is she looking for a recipe or is she looking for something obscene? Mm-hmm. And then it's going to make its judgment, but it bases itself off of what you put into the system. And the thing that I'm noticing when I do a general search now, and you know how you used to on your internet, you put in, hey, I want to find out about the moon. And you would get all these search results that would say, well, here's this resource on the moon. Here's this resource on the moon. Now you get an AI overview, depending on what search engine you use. And then in tiny print, Dr. Elena, you'll see AI could be incorrect. So how are we supposed to accept that AI is smarter than humans if it can be just as infallible as we are? But that's the stage where it is right now. The goal is to have it become to where it absolutely is never incorrect. And we have the burden of proof on ourselves. Take, for example, there's a new movie out by the name of Mercy. I did a show on this one. And the whole premise was this AI-generated system became a person's police officer, judge, and jury. And you had a mere 90 minutes to either prove your innocence or back up the evidence that the AI system had already collected against you to prove that you were guilty. And at the end of those 90 minutes, if you didn't prove your case that you were innocent, it would execute you. Now, this is supposed to be a fictional tale. But when you have another movie out there that is a Disney movie, Tron, and I can't remember the updated version, but it's another AI-generated computer-run system that pits a computer system against humans. So we're seeing more and more entertainment that, well, it's being called entertainment, but we're seeing more and more of this pop up. And people are going, oh, well, that could never happen. Well, I'm sorry, it absolutely is happening. You look at some of the other movies that have been precursors to this kind of shift in what computers could do and couldn't do against humans. And you'll see it's been a long history of, oh, well, we're going to spin this as science fiction, but I think we need to start looking at it in the frame of mind that it's not so much fiction as it is, it's promising us what will be our future unless we fight it.
Well, the whole premise is questionable because you're saying that you're putting in information from all sorts of sources, all of these searches, and it's humans inputting the information, right?
Right.
It's humans who, underneath everything, have programmed this thing. And, you know, it reminds me of back, you know, maybe about 10 years ago, there were robots that they had created, and at the end, they would have their own language. You couldn't understand it, or they'd try to escape. It was always something that wasn't positive towards towards humanity. And if they figure out or say humans are infallible, therefore they shouldn't exist, we're in trouble. If we connect everything into this system, whether it's your lights, your military system, your policing system, your credit system, how do you get out of this? And if it's a mistake that's made, who do you go to appeal? That's my question.
Well, you know, as far as appealing, I really don't know who or what entity right now would be the best one to appeal to unless we appeal to our leaders while they're still in discussion about it. Okay, take, for example, Congress is holding hearings. Well, if you look at and listen to the hearings, they have cherry-picked so-called experts to weigh in on why it's a good thing. So we need to start pestering our representatives and senators to go, okay, you're going to cherry-pick what's good to prop up your motive, but let's start looking at those with evidence about the negative, about the dangers, about how this is risking cybersecurity or a surveillance state or things like that. Let's start talking about those people and bring them into the hearings as well, because a hearing doesn't need to be just a cheerleading section for a politician. It needs to be a good pro and con hearing. I mean, that's what the idea behind a hearing is. I mean, when you go into a court of law, you don't get just the winning side's arguments. You get the plaintiff and you get the defendant.
And, you know, it's not like this is, you have to go and watch these sessions. It's not like they're prime time that everybody can weigh in and see what's being said. You know, their movement now towards being number one in AI and this quest to kind of corner the market on it. What do you think about that? I mean, it seems like it's a movement that's like you just described. It's all hands on deck, as fast as you can go. But there doesn't seem to be what if. And you're right, an alternate voice saying this may not be what everybody wants. And once you've opened this door, can you close it?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think that it's important to have that because the more AI is growing, the more it's labeling and in some cases mislabeling people. For example, some person could put this through an AI-fed system, our interview, and it could take our voices and our words, and it could take them totally out of context and formulate a statement that we said that we never actually said, but because AI now has it as supposedly verified proof, it's our word against a computer. Now, where we are right now, you would think that our word is worth more than a computer, but I think we're fast approaching a day where that's not necessarily going to be the case, and that is going to be the end of our free speech. I mean, we're already seeing our free speech attacked as it is now. I can't understand the depth and breadth that it would take for AI to go, well, you said A, B, C, and D that was against this particular government or that particular government, therefore you don't get to speak at all. You know, we're seeing that kind of censorship happen right now, even without AI. Mm-hmm. So how much more is that sort of groupthink going to be supported by something as in this case, sinister as artificial intelligence?
Well, you know, it doesn't even take into consideration the deepfake side of it, right? Where people create the person or the voice, use your voice or someone who's actually deceased now. That's another section of this where you can speak to a deceased loved one.
No. See, you're starting to mess with spiritual things, and we're not supposed to do that. We are absolutely not supposed to. And, you know, here's the thing, and I didn't mean to interrupt, but when you're talking about carrying on a conversation with a dead person, there was a show I did a couple of years ago, I think it was, where there was, it was on the, I think it was right around the cusp of AI starting to creep in, but it was this app that you could put on your phone that, let's say you had had a relationship with a loved one and that loved one passed. Well, you could download this app and it could kind of carry on that relationship for you. There's a reason why that person died. There was a reason why that person is no longer in your life. Yes, cherish the memories. Yes, go over in your head things that you remember. But to willfully want to carry on a conversation as if that person is still living affects your mental health. It affects your well-being. It affects your sleeping, your eating, everything about you. For example, my parents both died 7 years apart. I no more want to have a conversation with either one of them than the man in the moon. And it's not because I don't love them. It's because I know they're gone. And I know what state they left this earth in. One died instantly. The other, a slow, agonizing death who didn't even know who she was. That was my mother. I don't want conversations with someone who was my mother but doesn't know who she was. I don't want to have a conversation with my dad who died instantly of a heart attack, because what would I possibly say? What could I possibly have that would benefit my being all this time later? There's not. It would only continue to keep me wallowing in grief. And I'm not saying that I don't ever miss them. I do, but there are healthy ways to deal with grief, and carrying on a conversation with a dead person through AI is not healthy.
I would agree with that. And we're seeing so much mental health issues pop up, depression. You have these chatbots that are kind of leading people to hurting themselves. And it's not healthy. I would absolutely agree with you. On that note, let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. And Lynn, you made a really poignant point about living and about spirituality. I think we're moving so far away from, as a society, from God and from what moral and ethical constraints need to be. Just because you can do it doesn't mean it's ethical or moral. And there are prices to pay, I think, from it. And if we extrapolate that now back to the education system, I mean, I foresee children who don't have a frame of reference really being affected by this in a way that I don't even know what that means down the road for them as adults. So how does AI come into play in the education system? Why is there such a push there? I mean, there's not, you know, the nuts and bolts of education is to create, right? To learn how the connections, how to be a critical thinker, how to be a productive member of society. How do you think AI is going to affect children in this way?
Well, I think it's going to slot them. I mean, we've already seen that happen with the computer algorithm-driven assessments that they have to take. AI is just going to continue to coach them in this aspect. It also is being championed in DC as a way to beat China because, you know, China is number one as far as technology and all that kind of thing. China's not our enemy. AI is our enemy. Now, when I make a statement like that, I'm not dismissing the legitimate parts of our country's enemies. I'm not doing that at all. What I'm saying is in this context, we shouldn't be so focused on another nation. We should be focusing in on our children, on our grandchildren, on our neighbors' children, on those who are going to college, because the push is to have AI control what is taught, how it's taught. Because after all, we need more 21st century skilled labor. And because we have that, well, then we'll have a better economy, which is why I opened the show with it's about control and economy. Nothing we're seeing happen in education is devoid of those two mechanisms because it is still a top-down system.
But if you're not, if you never learn how to think from the bottom to be logical, let's say.
Right.
Even for simple things like being able to write and to be create a story from nothing to, you know, we used to have history lessons where we have a testing. It was never multiple choice. There was a question. Mm-hmm. We had to make a thesis. We had to prove why we thought something. Right. And we had to really come from the bottom up to prove it and then have a conclusion. Are these children able to do that? I don't see that.
No, they're not. They're not because what they're being taught is that, well, you don't have to know how to spell or how to have to write a grammatically correct sentence because, well, you have an app like Grammarly. Well, it basically takes what you wrote and it will go in and it will edit it for you. And right now it's staying right on your context. But what happens when it identifies you as a nonconformist, because that's part of the surveillance part of it, and you submit something that's written, it's going to edit it to make you continue to not only have that nonconformist stand out, but to somehow maybe be brought to attention so that those who are in charge could go, well, I'm sorry, Johnny and Susie don't get credit or the enough social credit because, well, they spoke out against the government.
Got you. And what's interesting too, what you just described, is there's no growth in this.
No.
There's no way for the child to expand their knowledge. It's you get pigeonholed and then you don't have a chance, it seems to me, to grow, to make a case, to actually learn, because learning is changing your mind a lot of the times. Once you have more information, things look different to you and you see things differently. I don't see that in the system would ever happen.
But if it's spoon feeding you what to think, which is what we've seen happen with the Common Core, which is still alive and well, it's teaching children what to think, not how to think. And that's the big distinction. And AI continues that, only we have a Congress that is absolutely so convinced that because AI needs, America needs to be number one in AI, well, therefore we have to almost mandate that everything become AI driven. And what is not being put into consideration is the cost to the environment. Because let's face it, AI has to have data centers, and data centers have to have energy. And guess who has the land? And guess who has the energy? It's the people.
Well, from what we're seeing, it's a major, you know, devastation to this, to the communities, between having to pay more for your electricity or losing farmland for data centers or
polluting
water.
Taking the water and polluting it. And what do you get in return? You get in return toxins and heavy metals, and you get increases in healthcare costs because you now have people with more diseases. I mean, we did a whole show on that. What was it, a month or so ago? We talked about the healthcare cost. Well, part of healthcare is instantly married to education because, after all, we have the Every Student Succeeds Act, which is still in play, whether or not the Department of Education is actually shut down or not. That law still exists. And as long as that law is on the table, it will place healthcare, labor, and education in the same pot. So what goes for one has to go into the other two. You already brought up that you're seeing an increase in AI in healthcare. Well, guess what? It's there in labor and it's there in education. It's not going away, but what our burden needs to be as a taxpayer, as a concerned citizen, is how are we going to steer the conversation so that AI is, first of all, reined in and does not become a surveillance operation against us, like is being set up. And also keeping harm away from each other, because this system seeks to harm us. Remember, nothing from the government in their services, in their funding, in their education system, in their healthcare system, in their labor system, and certainly not in AI, is to benefit you. It is to benefit a non-breathing system, because that's what a government is. It's a system.
Well, could you take it even a step further and say it's about compliance?
Absolutely.
Right. You won't have people arguing, complaining if they don't know there's an alternative.
Right. And what is one of the alternatives? Well, one of the alternatives is to go off grid, and people are going, I am not moving out to the country and I'm not wiping my bottom with a corn cob. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is divorcing yourself from the use of so much technology. It can be done. It has been done. It was done for generations, and people got along just fine. But I know one of the downsides to that is information like this can't get to the people.
You know, it's interesting, too, that to me, you would have the upper hand if you had a society that could think for itself, think on its feet, be flexible, and be a self-starter. I mean, that to me is how we have ingenuity, how we win against another society that's very rote. You know, they don't learn anything except to copy and to just spit out, regurgitate what they learn. I don't understand how people, powers that be, the people who are in command or control, if you want to put it that way, don't see that. There's no way that one society who doesn't have individuals and individuality can beat one that does. I mean, how does that, doesn't anybody think in those terms, or it's just about, I need to get back in, I need to make sure that I have a lifetime in service to yourself, usually. But that seems all they care about. It's not the bigger picture.
Yeah, I think they're so focused, and I think that our government has steered them into this by keeping them so busy. Well, you have to have a job to get an income to pay your bills. Mm-hmm. And the way that is working, it's going to take more than one income. Well, we're going to keep you busy working. We're going to keep you busy tired because we're manipulating the clock. I mean, we're about to go into what I call idiot time, which is daylight saving time. You don't save anything, but what you do is you deprive your body of sleep. You deprive your body of your eating schedule. You know, everything is thrown off. Your circadian rhythm is absolutely affected. If you don't think that goes into your work ethic and your well-being, it absolutely does. And so when you have a government that is so bent on keeping you so tired and so weak, what do you expect?
Let's talk about it from a different perspective, like the teacher perspective. I mean, what's going on? I mean, we talked about it a lot on the show, that teachers are not being able to do what they were, you know, their God-given gift is to educate. What's going on from that standpoint? Are they getting removed by AI as well?
Or oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I can give you a personal family example. My husband is an instructor at a for-profit trade school. His teaching is pretty much reduced to, okay, here's the lecture. The rest is on the computer. Whereas before this kind of system was set up, he was doing all the lecturing, all the, you know, all the teaching, the real teaching, okay? That's not the case anymore. And he has been party to, and I think we've talked about this on another show, he and another instructor were using the AI-driven computer testing, and it was changing the questions constantly on them based on their answers. So it was in real time slotting even the instructors. And so it will grade the instructors on, well, you're knowledgeable or you're not. And if you reach so many times where you're considered not knowledgeable on a subject, well, guess what? You can be replaced. Only this time, instead of it being a person to lead those students, it's a computer.
This seems like a moving target. It, you know, it's either right or it's wrong, right? There shouldn't be this slide towards whatever's expedient or convenient or puts the movement of education away from absolute truths and absolute non-truths to this. That doesn't seem right.
Right. Well, you have to also consider, with AI being fallible right now, if AI says that the sky is black, are you actually going to buy into that? Or are you still going to use your God-given ability to look at the sky and go, no, the sky's not black. It's blue, or it's gray, or, you know, it's the clouds are white. I know that's a very basic example, but that's what we're coming to. What is actual fact and what is assumed as a fact when it's actually not?
Well, that's a recipe for chaos, really, or cognitive dissonance. And when that happens to me, especially for children, doesn't that breed anxiety, depression? Mm-hmm. Because there's no standard. I mean, we've had this conversation before. One of the teachers I remember the most and learned the most from were the most rigid. You knew what your boundaries were. You didn't cross them because there was something that's going to happen that wasn't pleasant, right? Detention. Your mm-hmm. parents are going to be informed. This doesn't seem. It seems so out there that anything can be the truth, depending on what the movement of the, you know, the truth of the day is.
Really. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, those in charge will be able to change the narrative, and you know, the cost to you will be on the blockchain or the social credit system. So that's the cost you will pay for not being compliant or not doing whatever the system dictates. And I know that sounds like we're reading a science fiction book, but you know, you've mentioned Brave New World several times on some of our shows.
It's like a recipe. It's really, you need to read that book. Everybody does, just so that you can get a feel for where it seems that this pervasive energy is being moved away from God, for example, towards whatever the whim is of the voice, the societal voice. And that societal voice, to me, is about divide and conquer. And on that note, let's take our second break, because I want to go over that. I think people are, everybody seems, it's just not healthy. Let's put it that way. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. And Lynn, before the break, I was trying to make the comment that it's not like everybody's at peace. This is society rife with medication for anxiety, people not sleeping, people backbiting each other. And my segue to that is, do you think that's by design? If we're all looking over our shoulder, as, you know, askance at somebody that they're going to do something to us, does that make it easier for this system to come into play?
I think so. I really do. Because remember, one of the aims is to put us into a surveillance state. I mean, we're already there in large degrees. Remember the Patriot Act. That wasn't about terrorism. That was about identifying who the nonconformists were. And if you looked at the list of people who were considered to be among the suspected terrorists, well, you had ordinary folks like, you know, God-fearing parents who wanted to homeschool their children. They were on that suspect list. Why? Because they were nonconformist. You have other groups who were on, you know, who were supposed to be on the watch list, so to speak. Well, why did our government feel the need to make a watch list? It's because instead of going after the bad guys, they're assuming everyone's the bad guy. And well, we need to surveil you now so we can figure out if you really are a bad guy or if you really aren't.
It's a mess, honestly.
And look at where we are since then, because the Patriot Act has been updated through several other acts with different names to them. Now, I can't give you those names right now, but I do know that the Patriot Act has been beefed up in some ways. Why do you think we have those TSA agents? And that's a violation of your civil rights. That's a violation of your constitutional rights. But look how many people will willingly go through those parameters.
True. Or real ID or anything else that's...
Yeah.
Putting us on this.
This is about a surveillance. Now, one of the things that I've noticed in some of this research that connects over into education, and we're seeing a shift, is because there's a system that's called PRISM, and it was designed initially for healthcare because it was supposed to help identify people who were at risk. Let's say it was the Practical, Robust Implementation and Sustainability Model, and it was supposed to be to help with public health and data sets and things like that. Well, you have now, and this came around about 2008 for healthcare. Well, in 2007, a year before, the Green Movement got a hold of this kind of model and said, well, we need to use it for recognizing what kind of patterns are going on. Well, over in Texas, as late as 2025, you can see that the Department of Education in Texas has recoined PRISM to be pattern, reason, ideas, situation, and methods for behavior tracking. So this is how you take a healthcare model for data and you turn it over into education. And don't think I'm picking on Texas, because Texas is not the only state that uses this kind of system. So now you've got a PRISM for healthcare. You now have one for the Green Movement. And now you have one for education. They're all off of the same model, which is the Presidio model, excuse me, that was cooked up between IBM and, let's see, who else was in that? We have the World Economic Forum, I know, but you have SAS International, you have Microsoft. And one of the reasons why IBM should be such a shocker is because let's not lose the fact that IBM has long been using data collection to harm certain populations. For example, IBM was there when the Nazis were in the concentration camps. IBM came up with an algorithm to be able to identify who could live and who couldn't. So it wasn't just about the Jewish people. It was also about people who were nonconformists, people who were considered special needs, people who were considered homosexual or bisexual or whatever kind of sexuality that was not considered normal at that time. Then you have IBM that shows up that's using data when it came to South Africa and the apartheid movement. And we're supposed to suddenly trust that IBM has now turned over a new leaf and really gives a fig about what Johnny and Susie are doing in education. No, they don't, because the I think it was the former head of IBM, or maybe it's now two previous administrators, came up with a list of 22 jobs that would become obsolete due to AI. So that's the age we're living in. Microsoft, we know, is damaging enough to our absolute ecosystem and to our education system. I mean, it was the idiot in charge of Microsoft who decided, oh, I'm going to enter into an international agreement with the United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization to create a one-world curriculum. That's
like
what, driven by tests.
Is becoming the gold standard. Everything is based off of tech. And you mentioned there's five ways tech is impacting life, according to the WF's
yep.
forum, and that's the future of AI. Is it possible to discuss that? Because that seems to me where it's moving.
Right. Okay. Well, the five ways are artificial intelligence, virtual reality, gene edification or editing, excuse me, not edification, but editing, blockchain, and nanotech. And every one of those is in the career clusters and the STEM education. So you cannot tell me that this is not a global agenda, because it absolutely is. When you have education that is split into career pathways and career clusters for propping up learning to supposedly support AI or virtual reality. And what's the harm in virtual reality? Well, it skews the narrative as to what is real and what isn't. Because I can put on that special headgear and I can go take a field trip over to the Sahara Desert without ever leaving my front yard. Well, what's the problem with that? It takes away the ability to explore on your own or to take in information with your eyes and your ears and your sight. Or it takes away the opportunity to be able to travel, to have that curiosity grow. And virtual reality will give you some of the sights. It might even give you some of the sounds, but it's not going to give you the real spark to become creative or to feel your toes in the sand or to, you know, study about the oasis by going to an oasis. It robs you and then supplants something that's supposed to substitute a real experience. So what is this going to morph into? Well, we've already seen how it's taken over industries where people want to feel. We talked about the apps that were extending conversations with dead people. Think about the porn industry. It's now morphed over into virtual reality. So you don't have to leave your house to cheat. You could just log on to a virtual reality program and have at it.
I actually read an article or saw, I think it was a YouTube, about how people were having relationships with AI in preferentially to a real relationship. And so I'm this person that programmed their AI boyfriend to be somewhat snarky and abusive, and they liked it. I mean, this doesn't even make sense to me. How do you, is it to break the bonds of society where you actually have to interact with each other, and there's energy that passes between humans when they talk and when they're together, when they're having fun together? This is very individual, right? You're having a relationship outside of humanity.
Right. It absolutely is. It's supposed to somehow either be better or take the place of a human relationship. Well, there was a reason why we were created to be in community. And that was because there's safety in our community. There's help and support in our community. There's also the valuable human touch, whether it's a handshake, a hug, a kiss, or relations mm-hmm. between a husband and a wife or any of that sort of thing. When you rob the body of the naturally induced endorphins and dopamine and things like that, you're absolutely monkeying with the balance of your well-being and your mental health. So we're somehow going to supplant a physical loving relationship between you and an AI system? I don't think so.
You know, you see how this has all come online, you know, between the TikTok, Instagram set of society where everybody's living their life virtually, creating narratives that they feel good about themselves, but it's not real. And it's now become codified in a way, right? So if AI is the gold standard, everybody needs to be on that continuum. Otherwise, there's something wrong with them.
Well, anytime you see the Presidio AI framework or you see the PRISM framework, they're both being sold as, oh, we're using them to create a safe and ethical way to use AI. Now, that may be the case, but 9 times out of 10, when you get into the fine print of the documents, you see it's about control, it's about surveillance, it's about economy, and it's about gearing the society to innovate. And innovate is the buzzword, because we're attaching it to social. So when we hear a phrase like social innovation, we're not talking about improving society for the better. That's what they want you to think. That's what the system wants you to think is, oh, yes, we're doing this for the betterment. No, we're innovating. We're coming up with different ways so that we can keep tabs on you. And you're going to think I've got my hat on backwards, that I'm smoking dope. It's because I've read the documents and I've seen the vernacular and I've looked at the companies that are pushing this. They do not have safe and ethical goals in mind. They'll tell you they do because that's what you want to hear. But what they really want to do is to be able to say, well, we're driving the bus of where society's going, and it doesn't matter what you say, we're not changing the route. PRISM is adapted from a Feilstein and Glasgow movement that was called REAIM. And here's what REAIM stands for: reach, effectiveness, adoption, implementation, and maintenance. And what are we doing? We're applying this to society as a whole. And what is one of the bedrocks of our communities and our societies? Our education.
Framework, the frame of reference of not being in this system and looking at it from the outside in. But I feel for the people who don't know this, who've grown up from infants into this system. It's like living in black and white versus color. It's just not the same. On that note, let's take our last break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. Hey, Lynn, how can people see or listen to the shows that you've done on other platforms?
Thank you for asking. My website, commoncorediva.com. You can find almost every single podcast that I've done not only here on your platform, but on others as well. You can see my articles. You can type in any of the phrases that you hear us use, and you'll be able to find archives that will address every bit of this. One thing that I wanted to point out before we move on, though, is that in both the documents for PRISM and Presidio, what you will find are words like they want to funnel society. Well, what are we funneling from, and where are we funneling? What are we funneling into? We want to manipulate people. We want to manipulate the system. Well, why would AI want to manipulate the system? Again, control and money.
But I've heard statements, and you mentioned at the beginning of the show that they want this to be like the religion, that everybody draws from this as their source. What's your take on that? Is this supposed to be the next level, to get rid of God as part of every religion that believes in God and in a higher power? Is this supposed to supplant that?
It's interesting that you bring that up, because absolutely it is, because there is a talk, and I think it'll be in one of the resources that I sent you. If it's not outright resource that you can access, it'll be in one of the shows that I did, because in every show that I give, whether it's where you can see me or you just hear me, is that I will send the host or hostess all the links and resources so that the information can be shared with others. My point is, there is a 2026 address from the World Economic Forum, and it features a Jewish professor doctor who is giving a speech on what AI is and what it isn't. And in his speech, he tells you that because AI is gaining intelligence through words, well, it's going to replace law, because law is just words. It's going on the assumption that religion is just words. It's relying on the fact that, you know, our books are just words. Well, if we dumb it down to just words, then yeah, AI is going to take it over. But when you stop and you look, religion, that word is a man-made construct of what a worship and faith in God or your creator is. So replacing religion with a computer and having the computer become your religion or your God is a very mocking and dangerous thing. But how religion plays into all this is because the World Economic Forum has also published the roles of religion, and technology is right in the thick of it. So is education. So is skill-based learning. So are things like gender and the natural world, things like your economy, things that never should be attached to faith and worship, have been morphed into this particular document and being passed off as the gospel truth. When you go and you look at the actual gospel, you will find none of this in there. Or if you do, say, for example, government, it was about that the government would be on Jesus's shoulders, not under man's evil and corrupt reign. And it gives you example after example of what happens when men who were corrupt as leaders took their societies to
that
horrible levels.
It's pretty well thought out, because if you never have a frame of reference that you just described, that you don't have God as your center, you're lost. I mean, you don't have anything to stand on, and you'll willingly be part of this system.
I think it's going to be used against society because, you know, it's taking the roles of religion and grouping it into five main categories, and then going, oh, well, we're not going to just lump religion into five main categories. No, we're going to have 35 other connecting aspects of your life, so that we can use it to control you. Well, now, if that's the case, who in the world is going to want a relationship with the Lord? Nobody. I mean, if you know you're going to be used and manipulated, why would you? But you have to stop and consider that the whole basis for this is that somehow Christianity has to go. Judaism has to go. Islam has to go. All the other isms, they have to go because we have to be all of the same mind, whether it's in education or in our worship. And that's not how we were created.
For that system, if you don't question it, and if you don't, if you never know it, you don't even know that you can question it.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And I think that's the danger about having AI take over education so much, is because you don't know that you can challenge it. You don't know that there are other questions that need to be asked. I mean, you know, think about it. We've done shows on this about the diagnostic statistic manual that is used by our social workers and psychologists, where, you know, true disorders are listed, and then the definition has been widened so that, oh, we're going to take something as stubborn, and we're now going to relabel it defiance disorder. Being stubborn is not a disorder. Being stubborn is actually a gift in disguise. And who gave you that gift? It was God Almighty. Why did he give some people the gift of being stubborn? Because he knew there were going to need to be people in place who could be good leaders. And good leaders need to be stubborn. Good leaders also need to ask the hard questions or think outside of the box. But when you're so busy trying to stuff an entire nation into a box that it was never created to fit, how are you ever going to think you're going to be number one at anything?
Past shows about homeschooling and taking the control back as a parent for your child. Has that been somehow undermined? I mean, I know that you said that the curricula is still coming from one source, even if you're homeschooling. Has there been, in your opinion, and this may be a second question that needs to be asked or answered on another show, but is there still room for parents to be, you know, to lead their children away from this?
Absolutely there is. And, you know, just because Bill Gates said, and UNESCO said, and the Department of Education said, and the federal government said, and your state said that there needs to be, you know, one assessment, one curriculum, that doesn't mean that that's what you have to settle for. There are ways that you can still continue to have room. You just need to make sure that if you're going to homeschool, you're not using an online program. Sure, use a computer if you need to, but you don't have to buy into the fact that you are so ill-equipped that you have to have a computer-enrolled program. You don't. You absolutely don't. I can tell you that I have met many people in all my years of education, both as a teacher, as a parent, as a mentor, as a speaker, who came from all kinds of ways to homeschool. And 95% of them only use the computer as a reward, like maybe to play a game or maybe to, you know, use the paint program that was on the computer, or some way to say, okay, yes, you can go online, you can have 30 minutes of, you know, time or whatever, but there were parameters that were put in place. I've not spoken to a parent about computer use in a while, but I do know that parents have said we're concerned about what they have access to. And 9 times out of 10, it has to do with either content that is not appropriate, or the fact that they know their child is being surveilled.
As usual, goes too quickly, but we have to have a part two, because you've just, again, scratched the surface of how people can find a solution in this. This is still plastic enough, right, that we can opt out, that we can make decisions that don't feed it, but actually pull away from it.
Yeah. Absolutely. And remember, just like in healthcare, just because a government entity has placed a label on something and claimed that it's safe, don't let it convince you that it actually is. Because 9 times out of 10, remember, the government doesn't care about the people. It should care about the people, because after all, if you look at the way that America is set up, It was that we, the people, were supposed to be served by those who we elected. And somewhere down the line, that has shifted from those who are elected now have us serving them. We have to flip the narrative. We must. We absolutely must.
On that note, that call for action, we unfortunately have to end the show. But before we go, Lynn, again, how can people read what you write, listen to your shows? Because you are a voice that people do need to listen to.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Dr. Elena. It's always such a joy to be with you and your audience. You can find my website, commoncorediva.com. If you wish to financially bless any of the work that I do, there is a donate button. I do not receive corporate funding in any shape or form. I rely strictly on private donations. This is just a way to say thank you for all the information that I bring. If you cannot financially bless, then prayer support is always needed. You can find me on Catching Fire News with American Policy Center. You can find me on my blog. You'll find not only some of my articles that I think there are thousands of articles now, but you'll find all my podcasts too. So not only Dr. Elena's archives, but others as well. And again, use the search bar, whatever topic you're interested to. If it's in the news, if it's out of the news, and it's tied to education, it's on my blog.
Lynn, thank you so much again for joining me. I can't wait to do part two. This is just whetting people's appetite, in my opinion. And keep doing what you're doing because it is God's work, and I'm so happy that you're my friend. Thank you, Lynn, and thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.